Already the ships in the Moorpork docks, laden with grain, cotton and timber, and coated with tar, were blazing merrily, and their moorings burnt to ashes were breasting the River Ankh on the ebb tide, igniting riverside palaces and bowers as they drifted like drowning fireflies towards the sea. In any case, sparks were riding the breeze and touching down far across the river in hidden gardens and remote rickyards. The smoke from the merry burning rose miles high in a wind-sculpted black column that could be seen across the whole of the Discworld. It was certainly impressive from the cool, dark hilltop a few leagues away, where two figures were watching with considerable interest. The taller of the pair was chewing on a chicken leg and leaning on a sword that was only marginally shorter than the average man. If it wasn't for the air of wary intelligence about him, it might have been supposed that he was a barbarian from the Hubland Wastes. His partner was much shorter and wrapped from head to toe in a brown cloak. Later, when he has occasion to move, it will be seen that he moves lightly, cat-like. The two had barely exchanged a word in the last 20 minutes, except for a short and inconclusive argument as to whether a particularly powerful explosion had been the oil bond store or the workshop of Kerrible the Enchanter. Money hinged on the fact. Now, the big man finished gnawing at the bone and tossed it into the grass, smiling ruefully.
"There go all those little alleyways," he said. "I like them."
"All the treasure houses," said the small man.
He added thoughtfully,
"Do gems burn, I wonder? 'Tis said they're kin to coal."
"All the gold melting and running down the gutters," said the big one, ignoring him. "And all the wine boiling in the barrels."
"There were rats," said his brown companion.
"Rats, I'll grant you."
"It was no place to be in high summer."
"That too. One can't help feeling, though, a momentary..."
He trailed off, then brightened.
"We owed old Freedor at the Crimson Leech 8 silver pieces, he added.
The little man nodded. They were silent for a while as a whole new series of explosions carved a red line across a hitherto dark section of the greatest city in the world. Then the big man stirred.
"Weasel?"
"Yes."
"I wonder who started it."
The small swordsman, known as the Weasel, said nothing. He was watching the road in the ruddy light. Few had come that way since the Deosil Gate had been one of the first to collapse in a shower of white-hot embers. But two were coming up it now. The Weasel's eyes, always at their sharpest in gloom and half-light, made out the shapes of two mounted men and some sort of low beast behind them, doubtless a rich merchant escaping with as much treasure as he could lay frantic hands on. The Weasel said as much to his companion, who sighed.
"The status of footpad ill suits us," said the barbarian. "But as you say, times are hard, and there are no soft beds tonight."
He shifted his grip on his sword, and as the leading rider drew near, stepped out onto the road with a hand held up and his face set in a grin nicely calculated to reassure, yet threaten.
"Your pardon, sir," he began.
The rider reined in his horse and drew back his hood. The big man looked into a face blotched with superficial burns and punctuated by tufts of singed beard. Even the eyebrows had gone.
"Bugger off," said the face. "You're Brav the Humblander, aren't you?"
Bravd became aware that he had fumbled the initiative.
The shape and cosmology of the disk system are perhaps worthy of note at this point. There are, of course, two major directions on the disk, hubward and rimward. But since the disk itself revolves at the rate of once every 800 days, in order to distribute the weight fairly upon its supportive pachyderms, according to the Refourgul of Kroll, there are also two lesser directions, which are turnwise and widdershins. Since the disk's tiny orbiting sunlet maintains a fixed orbit while the majestic disk turns slowly beneath it, it will be readily deduced that a disk year consists of not 4, but 8 seasons. The summers are those times when the sun rises or sets at the nearest point on the rim, the winters those occasions when it rises or sets at a point around 90 degrees along the circumference. Thus, in the lands around the Circle Sea, the year begins on Hogswatch Night, progresses through a spring prime to its first midsummer, Small God's Eve, which is followed by autumn prime and straddling the half-year point on Cruel-tide, Winter Secundus, also known as the Spindle Winter, since at this time the sun rises in the direction of spin. Then comes Secundus Spring, with summer 2 on its heels, the three-quarter mark of the year being the Night of All's Fallow, the one night of the year, according to legend, when witches and warlocks stay in bed. Then, drifting